Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
Very well. I was at the game, and I enjoyed it very much, even though it was kind of a, you know, a weird game with not a whole lot to cheer for. Mm-hmm. It's the second game that I've attended at Rogers, down at the downtown arena.
Yeah.
And the first time I went with a friend of ours, Colin Ruddle. He sits in the lower bowl. This is the first time, Bruce, I think I bought tickets myself. And I went with my dad and my son. First time I think I bought tickets for an Oilers game in, I can't remember how long, like two decades.
Oh, yeah.
I always watch on TV. I'm a two-tier fan or third-tier fan.
Tier two fan, yeah.
But I bought tickets tonight, and this is my good thing. This is our two good things, two bad things, and two numbers podcast from the Oilers 3-2 loss to San Jose. And I picked them right on the edge of the top bowl. So in the kind of the nosebleeds, but right at the bottom of them. So there's no one blocking your view. And fantastic view. Sound system was great. And I just really enjoyed it. I thought it was, even though there's lost, I thought it was worth the money that I paid. And the arena is huge. Cavernous arena. I think in the old arena, when you were near the top, you were closer to the ice. Considerably closer to the ice than you are now.
Yeah, it's pushed back quite a ways, eh?
I believe it is. But nonetheless, they were pretty good. It was a good vantage point. I always like watching games from up there, actually. You can get a good sense of the play and a very different sense of the play than you get when you're watching it on TV. And for instance, was it his first goal? Or his first shot, Drysdale's first goal or first shot. Anyway.
Well, I think they were both the same because it came very early.
Yeah, he just first exploded goal. Forward. Like the speed of that guy that I saw. Like, you know, you can tell he's fast watching on TV, but just his explosion away from everybody else. I just got a real sense of it, of how fast a player Leon Drysdale is.
Second fastest guy on the team, eh?
Is that right?
I'm pretty sure. I mean, just put to my eye, and I know he won fastest skater competition his rookie year, the year before McDavid arrived, and he was still, you know, strengthening at that time. I mean, now he's a horse.
Fantastic attacking hockey player. Just a great player. And so let's go to your good thing, Bruce.
My good thing is Leon Draisaitl scoring both of Edmonton's goals tonight, his 48th and 49th of the season. And coming within an ace of number 50 on probably three different occasions down the stretch in the third period, a couple of wicked saves by Aaron Dell and a couple other near misses and certainly some block shots as the San Jose defense was paying him a little bit extra attention. It was pretty obvious that pucks were going to be funneled through Leon and San Jose cheated a little bit defensively, I guess. And you could say Edmonton cheated a little bit offensively, but he got his looks, and he played, 25, almost 26 minutes tonight, 25 and a half minutes, 12 shot attempts, 7 on net, and 5, by my count, 5 scoring chances off of his stick.
There was one shift late in the third period.
Oh, well, they had it for 2 minutes. Left,
so they just poured it on and on and on. There was one other shift earlier that year that was so perfect because they actually scored at the end.
Columbus game, yeah.
Yeah. This one they didn't score, but it was very enjoyable to watch that. Mm-hmm. And they just kept making that last second play to keep the puck in. Cassian sure shows a lot of skill. He did in the third period. I thought Cassian was kind of going through the motions in the first period. But, man, the guy can make some moves with the puck. He's making a real bid to be a top six forward next year, Bruce. Zach Cassian is and looks completely at home playing with those other guys. So
what impresses me the most about him for the player type, the thing that he does that you wouldn't expect, let's put it that way, for that big, brash, bashing, grinding power forward, is the soft touch passes that he's capable of. And I'm talking about the 2 and 5 foot one-handed at times passes. Like, he's really got some pretty nice mitts. It doesn't always have them, you know, directly around the net and stuff, but he's capable of making some very high-end skill plays.
Well, how about this? They'll have Cassian on the first or second line and at a bargain price of $1.9 million.
Mm-hmm.
And on the fourth line, they'll have the guy who should be playing like that. So it's kind of a trade-off, right? Like, it's and the owners don't lose much out of it. They got the Lucic on the fourth line, hopefully playing about 3 minutes a game. And
yeah, I don't see Cassian resembling a $6 million player anytime soon, but I would say the last half of this year, he's covered the bet on his contract, and I wasn't saying that for the last year and a half prior to that.
No, he'd have to get about 55 points and be the physical force to be a $6 million player.
Back to Leon for a sec, that first goal on this penalty kill where he picked off a pass right out of the air, just blasted by everybody, made the power deke. It was the old Marc Messier five-hole deke. I remember Messier when he had a breakaway, that was his go-to move where he'd go forehand to backhand, but he'd only go halfway. He'd open the goalie up, and then he'd quickly slip it right through the guy's legs, and that was basically what Leon did on that.
The half Mahovlich. The first Mahovlich being when you reach right around the goalie with your backhand and put it in, but that's the half Mahovlich.
No, Leon, you know, he when he gets the puck on the rush and he's doing it two or three times a game now, he reminds me of the Big M on the rush. He really does. And I loved the Big M as a kid. Like, he was my idol as a very young fellow.
Well, Leon's kind of a 70s kind of player, you know, because he's a puck handler. He handles the puck way more than most guys do. And that's what defined. And if you go back and you watch 70s hockey, you'll see it, man. They just held the puck forever, and everyone was stick handling around people. And Leon's capable of doing it. Hardly anyone is right now, right, in the modern game.
Yeah, it's but hard to do.
He still has that ability to do that. And all the owners are so lucky to have Leon Draisaitl and McDavid. It really is a fantastic building block for the next
GM. No kidding. I mean, as power duos go, I'm not sure who in the rest of the league would you trade those two for two other players. No. I mean, you might say two guys like, you know, Crosby and Malkin based on their past, but based on the future, not a chance. Like, you'd never do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're lucky, and at the same time, it's just so bloody frustrating. How can you have two guys that good, like, play the entire year, each score over 100 points, and yet here you are, like 10 points in arrears or 12 points or whatever the heck it is now. Edmonton has 77 and Colorado has 90.
Yeah.
So 13 points out of the playoff berth with two superstars, two elite players on your team, and you're still that weak of an overall team. It's really an indictment of the management team of the Edmonton Oilers. Yeah.
You know, nonetheless, Bruce, I'm still bullish. I mean, I'm a fan. I was telling my son, I think of the 13 years here, I've predicted the start of the year.
I haven't.
If I'm completely honest, I predicted the Oilers would make the playoffs, I think 11. Out of those 13 years.
Well, I hope one of the 11 was the year they actually did make it, and that wasn't the year you finally said, oh, hell with it, they're never going to make it.
No, it was, I think, it was Aikens's second year. I was so fed up with Aikens. And then the next year, McClellan's first year, I kind of learned I was cautious by then. You know, I'd been beaten down so much, it missed so many. So I don't think I picked them, although I might have picked them to make it that year, too. But then I think the year they made it, I think I probably did. In the last 2 years, I definitely have picked them to make the playoffs. So anyway, it's not surprising for me to be bullish on the team, but I do think, you know, it's just really hitting home and might hit home even more so, depending on how Bakersfield does in those playoffs, how important drafting is and what the Oilers have been missing since, let's face it, if we're completely honest, missing since about 1985. You know, that Oilers dynasty fell apart in the 90s, and they traded away their great players, but they also stopped drafting good players completely for a long time. And then this modern era, the Pendergrast era and the Stu McGregor era were marked by weak drafting. And finally, that's come to an end. So I'm still pretty bullish. But my bad thing, Bruce, is the invisible man on this team. And just this game, this game really hit home. I mean, you notice Drysdale out there. You notice McDavid, of course. You notice Sekera, who's a really good skater. You know, you don't really know. I didn't even notice Klefbom, Larson. You don't even notice those guys. But there's so many invisible men on the Oilers. Just players who do nothing in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to name any of them because we've named them all, and I don't want to pick on anyone in particular, but they're just player after player who goes out there and does nothing. So that's my bad thing. It's the invisible. These were the invisible Oilers. They had two guys who stood out like crazy, and then the rest of them were utterly nondescript.
Well, that's, you just described your 2018-19 Edmonton Oilers, David.
Yes.
And that's really been the story of the season now, hasn't it?
Yeah, even the so-called good players like Klefbom and Larson and Nurse, come on, do something. You know, really, seriously. I include. I know this really upsets people. I include RNH in the invisible.
I was going to say, he did nothing in this game.
Sorry, he's great on the power play, and he can make a play now and then. But there's lots of games where he's invisible too. And there's only two players you do not trade, and everyone else in my books is up for grabs in the right trade. Now, I don't want to see the Oilers trade Nugent Hopkins into two cruddy pieces or two average pieces.
Right.
I want them to trade up and get a better player with someone like him, or with any, or with Nurse, or with Larson, or with Klefbom. But listen, you can trade any of those people. I'm okay with it, as long as you're getting a better player back in return, packaging them up and getting a better player.
Well, my bad thing has to do with the Oilers on the face-offs. Tonight they were 26 out of 62 for 42%, and two critical goals, including the game winner, were scored directly off of face-offs that were lost so cleanly that the goals took, one of them took 2 seconds and one took three, because the puck was won right back to Brent Burns on the point. And one of them he just shot and scored, and the other one he shot and was tipped and scored. But the problem was the puck went back to him so fast, the wingers had no chance to even get out to the blue line to try and make a play on the guy. And it's just, they're just getting clobbered on the dot, and it's been a problem with this team forever.
Is San Jose ever savvy with the puck too? They're so sharp with the puck.
Yeah.
That's what the Oilers don't have, and I'm not going to start ranting again. Sorry, but face-offs.
Well, then part of it's, you know, they know where each other's going to be because they got guys that have been there for 6 and 8 and 10 and 12 years. You know, like Joe Thornton, who passed Steve Yzerman on the all-time assists this time with an absolutely gorgeous centering feed on the tying goal, the 1-1 goal. He's been on, like, it's not his first team, but he's been there since 2005, right? And Logan Couture has been there forever. And Joe Pavelski's been there longer than forever. And, you know, guys like Justin Brown, Mark Edward Vlasic, like, they got these core players that have been. So part of the professionalism that you see is they know where the hell each other's going to be out there on the ice. And sometimes you look at the Oilers and you wonder, you know, hey, Colby Cave, let me introduce you to Tobias Reeder, just in case you've never met before, because that pass sure looked like you didn't know where each other was going, you know, or whoever. I'm just picking two names out of the hat.
Was it Timo Meier that belted Sekera?
Yes, it was.
What a hit. You know what, Bruce? And here's my outlandish comparison of the day. I was trying to tell my son how Tyler Benson plays. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Timo Meier. I'm not saying that. But that's the kind of game Benson has a little bit. That's kind of really super smart. He's not super fast, but he's really, really good in tight spots. Excellent vision with the puck.
And never run anybody over like that?
Physical player. I don't know if he has or not, but he's not. He's sturdy on his skates. Mm-hmm. I think I said that before the hit. Like, that's kind of an X. Like, if Benson does that, like, mm-hmm. I don't know how much Timo Meier does that, quite honestly. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of player I'm hoping that we're going to see eventually. Not next year. It took Timo Meier a little while, too, to,
oh, yeah, it sure did.
To become Timo Meier. But, man, that was a...
he's a big, strapping fellow. And I know that Andrei Sekera has a friend in Milan Lucic tonight.
That was good.
And he should be buying Milan Lucic a beer. I mean... Well, Lucic, I mean, he was right there. And it was, like you would say, a clean hit, but it was a high and a heavy hit. And the pros set a different standard. Like, people get mad when they say players overreact to clean hits. But you're in my definition of clean hit, I think, is different than what the players see. The players see the violence of the hit, how hard it is, how much of a guy was taken advantage of in a vulnerable position. And if it's a veteran, and if it's bloody game 81 of a game 82 game season, you know, taking a run at the guy and smoking him. I mean, I can understand why Lucic wasn't impressed, and I actually didn't mind his reaction. If it canceled the power play, well, so what?
So Timo Meier, according to Hockey Reference, is 6 feet 210.
Mm-hmm.
And Benson is 6 feet 190. So
6 feet, hey? I thought he was bigger than that.
No, anyway, I didn't think Meier was, but he is 20 pounds. He's got, so yeah. I'm sure he, so I'm not saying you expect that kind of hit out of Tyler Benson, but just some strong work on the board, some smart play in tight spaces with really good vision, which I think are all aspects of that define Meier's game. Smart offensive hockey zone player, not necessarily a speed burner. That's Benson's game.
Mm-hmm.
So, Bruce, my number, I think you already alluded to it in passing, is 12. It seemed like every time you looked, Drysdale was attempting a shot, which was great, which was exciting and made the game fun. So he had 12 attempted shots,
wow.
7 on net, and as you said, 5 scoring chance shots. So, wow, that was a inspired offensive game from Leon Drysdale. He probably dragged his butt a few times on defense. But just totally was possessed to score, and that was fun to see. That was a lot of fun to watch that guy go for it. And so I'd love to see him close out, obviously, which an Oilers fan would love to see him close it in Calgary with his 50th goal. Although
first, like, honestly, only 2 behind Ovechkin, right?
Yeah, that's my son Jack was saying, well, maybe he'll tie Ovechkin in Calgary. That'd be awfully sweet. I have to say, I wasn't too upset the Oilers lost. Now they sit in 7th now in the draft position. So, you know, might get a little bit better player than sitting in the 8 or 9 spot. What's your number, Bruce?
My number is 18, 19, and 4. That's Edmonton's record on home ice this year. The so-called friendly confines. They had a nice start, 10-4-1 through the first 15 home games, and then they won all of 8 of the final 26 home games of the season. 8 wins, 18 losses. And you can say, well, 8-19-4, or you can say 18-23, because those 4 losses in overtime, they're still losses, right? I mean, they won 5 games in overtime also on home ice. So, you know, they won 13 in regulation, 5 in overtime. They lost 19 in regulation and another 4 in overtime. So, and I think they were like -8 or something in goal differential. Like, they were the second best team on their home ice against the field. And it's unsatisfying and it's unsatisfactory that a team could go for. And basically, they blew their season in December and January when they won 2 out of 14 on their home ice.
Well, I was just going to raise that, Bruce. Do you think if Chris Russell, let's say Chris Russell and Oscar Klefbom hadn't gotten hurt,
mm-hmm.
do you think the Oilers would have made the playoffs?
Well, I think for sure they would have been closer. I mean, they fell off a cliff they won a couple games after those guys down, basically running on fumes and a little bit of luck. And then, holy hell, it just came apart. I mean, they had a 5-game homestand in last part of December where they went 0-5-0, right? They got smoked in about 3 of those games. And then They had another 5-game losing streak at home, you know, a month or so later. So it was just. Klepbom was back.
Yeah, if they hadn't gotten hurt, they wouldn't have made those horrible trades either, eh? Like Manning trades. They would have had a Kajula. You know, I didn't think Kajula was up. Like, I know he was scoring, but now he was leaking defensively. But at least he's as good as any of their wingers they had. It probably better putting the puck in the net.
Well, the guy they traded him for did nothing to help the team.
Well, exactly. He was ghastly. That was just a terrible trade. So, yeah, I think I'll say if those two hadn't gotten hurt, they would have made the playoffs. But that doesn't neither here nor there because they got hurt, and we don't know.
Yeah, well, most teams had guys get hurt, and most teams, were able to cope.
And here's the difference with the Oilers because they never have had. They've been terrible at player procurement and drafting and developing, mainly drafting. I think they haven't been able to fill in. And Jones wasn't – I think actually Jones was there to fill in as a third-pairing guy, and they should have just played him instead of acquiring those other two.
Yeah.
But next year, they'll have those players. When guys get hurt off the pro roster, they will have players who can step in, and they don't have to scramble as much, and that's going to make a difference on next year's team as well. So I'm all about the next year, Bruce. That's my
– Well, there's not much left to talk about this year. Only one more game, eh? I mean, we're there.
Just the Condors, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's right. We'll have some playoffs in Bakersfield to watch.
End of the regular season there, too, is coming up. I don't know if Ryan McLeod's OHL season is over or not. I don't know if Saginaw won. I don't know if they'll call McLeod to the bake.
Maybe.
I'd like to see that. He didn't have a particularly great scoring season in his 20-year-old season in Major Junior. I think he was 20 or is he 19?
19.
Excuse me.
Yeah, he was a late birthday, so he turned 19 early in the season, but he was just drafted 1 year ago.
He didn't have a great scoring year, but I think it's hugely optimistic to see him based on that as a forward who's going to make the first or second line in the NHL. But he really looks like he could be a solid third-line player. In the NHL, not next year. He's going to need a year, 2 years in the AHL. But
I had to start with a couple games in Bakersfield. Wouldn't go amiss.
Wow! Remember in that preseason game that we were scrimmage, he was just flying.
Yeah, he's a good skater.
The fastest skating prospect in the Oilers system. Is that fair to say?
He's certainly high on that list for sure.
Who else would Jones? I guess
Jones. Yeah, they're not. I mean, unfortunately, even the prospect list, they're not overburdened with speed burners.
No.
Right? I mean, guys like Benson, Marody, those are good prospects. Guys we're seeing, Gambardella, Curry, those guys, they're decent players, but none of them is like you'd say, well, he can fly and then he can do other things as well.
No, Lagesson's not fast. Bear's not fast. No, we don't know about Joel Persson, right, from Sweden. Right.
Not really.
And we don't know about Philip Berglund.
No.
So I'm assuming Persson's a fast skater, but I don't know that. And Caleb Jones is a really fast skater. Samarukov is a very fluid skater.
Mm-hmm.
A fast skater.
Yeah, they certainly got some nice pieces in the pipeline.
Maximov's not a fast skater.
I'm just not seeing anything that's sort of inevitable that's going to be on the team. That's a guy that's really going to change the speed equation.
And no.
That's one area of the Oilers
except for Caleb Jones, Bruce, who that could be significant.
Yeah. It's shocking that a team that's two stars can skate the way that McDavid and Draisaitl do. That's, the team is such a plodding team otherwise. You think they would build around speed with more speed, but that wasn't the way it was done.
Yamamoto's a pretty good skater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you say he's above average NHL skater?
Maybe.
I think he is.
He's quick. I don't know if he's like got wall to wall speed, but he's certainly quick and darting kind of skater.
Yeah. Boy, that'd be great if he is healthy in the playoffs and can finally get going big time. So we'll see that as well. That's another thing I'm looking forward to watching. Cameron Hebig's a fast skater, but he's not scoring much at the at that at the age, and he's 21 or 22.
Yeah, he had a hot start, and then he kind of cooled right off.
Shockingly, he almost was a point of game guy for about the first.
Yeah, he was scoring on the power play. He had a early on. He was getting a bunch of goals, I think, from the Ovi spot, and then that stopped happening, and it didn't come from anywhere else. David, how did your dad enjoy the game?
Oh, he liked it. He liked being there. Mm-hmm. I went for years in the old building. We always sat in the top corner.
Oh, yeah.
Section 8, row 32.
All right. Okay.
Coliseum. And watch Wayne Gretzky and Yari Curry and
Mark. Well, you were up behind us. We used to sit in Section E down in that same corner as Section 8.
I also watched a lot of Tom Gilmore and Rusty Patinode and all those players. I loved the WHA hockey. I mean,
yeah, I did too.
But I just really loved it. The players had so much personality, and it was a totally different feel to the whole thing. I mean, it was not sold out, and you could often move down into better seats. We sometimes did that.
Yeah.
This new rank, it was the first time in the lower bowl, I just felt more distant from the game. Mm-hmm. I just felt like more at home in these higher seats. Maybe it's because
I sat in the upper bowl last time I went against New York Rangers there about a month ago. And that was my first time. Like, I've been fortunate that the games I've gone to, I've always been in the lower bowl. It's high in the lower bowl typically, but that's great. That's actually about the best places. But this was up in the upper bowl. And I thought the view of the game actually was terrific. And I didn't get vertigo and fall down the steps like I thought I might. Coming, it's a very visually strange view coming down those stairs. But the view up there was pretty good.
Have you seen that new movie on Netflix about the guy climbing the free climb? What do they call it?
I read a couple of reviews on it, but I haven't seen it.
It still hurts my head thinking about that movie, Bruce. That is the craziest. That was the scariest movie I have seen since then. Yeah. It's not a horror movie, but it is so absolutely frightening. Physically frightening to watch that movie. You're just like, this guy. So the steps in the call in the new the downtown arena aren't that bad, but it was kind of like that.
Yeah, when you're coming down, like you go right to the very top and then you come down to your seats. If you're on row one, you're closest to the ice, but furthest from the concessions. It's kind of a funny setup. But to get down to row one, that climb down the stairs, I just found it a little bit, visually strange.
And I wouldn't want to do it slightly after the stairs, put it that way.
Maybe slightly queasy. So
yeah, I wouldn't want to try that after if you've been drinking. Like, I don't know, has anyone pitched down those stairs yet?
I would imagine.
Yeah.
I would imagine. Attended enough Oilers and Eskimos, especially Eskimos games over the years, to see people take a header down the cement steps a few times. It's never a pleasant thing to see.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. You're doing the grades.
I'm doing the grades. I got a ways to go yet. I'm being a little abrupt again tonight. I mean, the games are officially meaningless, so I don't suppose anybody wants to know what Colby Cave shift by shift, Precy or anything like that. So
don't undersell yourself, Bruce. You know, you could make that interesting.
I probably could, but I'm just about at the end of my tether for this season. You know, the losing's getting to me too.
You and Connor McDavid. All right.
I've been losing a lot longer than he has.
Yeah. You're threatening to become a fan of another team.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's just, I'd like to see a change in the plot one of these years.
Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.